Iran's top diplomat reacts to his U.S. counterpart's remarks about a JCPOA. He says lifting Trump sanctions is not negotiating leverage. China's warning the United States and South Korea against any interference regarding Taiwan issue. p.m. here in Tehran. This is World News with me, Behrouz Najafi. It's good to have you with us. A leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, says that Palestinians' fight against Israeli occupiers amounts to resistance against tyranny and oppression. The leader made a comment in response to a letter from Ismail Haniyeh, who heads the political bureau of Palestinian resistance movement, Hamas. In response to another letter from Ziad al-Nakhala, the head of the Islamic Jihad movement, Ayatollah Khamenei hailed Palestinians' victory in the face of the recent Israeli aggression. The leader said that Palestinians will eventually emerge victorious in their fight against Israel. The Gaza Strip is still reeling from deaths and destruction caused by Israel's airstrikes and shelling of civilian homes and vital infrastructure in the besieged Palestinian territory. Some 280 Gazans were killed and over 1,900 others injured in 11 days of the aggression before a ceasefire last Friday. Local officials and international agencies say the destruction of civic structure makes it harder to treat the injured and deal with the surge in COVID cases. Meanwhile, the International Committee of the Red Cross says it's sending medical equipment and supplies to Gaza to treat those wounded and cope with the collapsed infrastructure. According to the UN Humanitarian Coordinator, the World Health Organization, other institutions are also planning to ship coronavirus vaccines to Gaza within days. Local officials say the reconstruction will cost tens of millions of dollars. An Egypt-brokered truce, which came into effect on May 21st, put an end to 11 days of deadly aggression of Israel on the Gaza Strip. People in the besieged territory and the occupied West Bank hailed the truce as a victory for Palestinian resistance groups in the face of Israeli attacks. Now, with the ceasefire in place, thousands of displaced Palestinians are returning to their homes. However, what awaits them is nothing but a pile of debris of their homes bombed by the Tel Aviv regime.
The recent Israeli aggression against the besieged Gaza Strip began on May 10th, after the Israeli regime attacked worshippers in Al-Aqsa Mosque and started eviction plans of the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood in the occupied East Jerusalem Al-Quds. This wasn't the first time the besieged territory came under Israeli fire. However, this time Palestinians turned the tables against the regime and launched unprecedented rocket and drone attacks on Israeli cities, inflicting damage and casualties on the enemy. Finally, after 11 days of brutal Israeli attacks that killed at least 279 Palestinians, including 69 children, the occupying regime announced a unilateral ceasefire on Friday, which was accepted by Palestinian resistance groups with Egyptian mediation. People in the besieged Gaza Strip and the occupied West Bank hailed the truce as a victory for Palestinian resistance groups in the face of Israel's attacks. The 11-day-long Israeli aggression resulted in the displacement of over 90,000 Gazans and the destruction of Gaza's critical infrastructure and many civilian buildings. International NGOs and Gaza officials say several hospitals and schools, as well as power and sewage plants, have been severely damaged. The Red Cross says that Gaza could take years to rebuild. Moreover, Palestinian lawyers say the Israeli army's use of live fire and rubber-coated bullets from short range against Palestinian demonstrators is a war crime. Meanwhile, Palestinian Foreign Minister Riyad al-Maliki has sent a letter to the International Criminal Court's prosecutor's office, including documents on new and ongoing crimes, calling for an investigation into Israel's war crimes in Gaza, West Bank, and Jerusalem al-Quds.
I think that now, following the horrific damage that Israel did, wherein it targeted homes, medical centers, press buildings, These are all in blatant violation of international law. And much as Israel like to say that Hamas had some presence there, there is no evidence to support that. So I think this time, with an investigation about to begin regarding possible war crimes that Israel committed in 2014, I do believe that these will be added to it.
Iran has briefed the IAEA chief regarding the decision to extend technical memorandum for another month. The 3 months March era is over. Iran was waiting for the sanctions to be removed. It didn't happen. Now, Iran is doing this out of goodwill, and we're also waiting to do the live coverage of Mr. Rafael Gross's presser or addressing at the Vienna Center. Iran's leader Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei has congratulated the Palestinians for their victory against Israel, saying that, quote, the savage enemy well realized that it is incapable of facing Palestine's united uprising. The leader said that all Muslim nations have a responsibility regarding the Palestinian cause, and they must support the Palestinian people honestly.
Following a ceasefire between Tel Aviv and Palestinian resistance groups, after 11 days of Israel's deadly war on the Gaza Strip, Hamas and the military wing of the Islamic Jihad movement, Al-Quds Brigades, thanked Iran for its unwavering support for the Palestinian resistance, saying Iran is a partner in the victory against Israel. Iran's leader, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, congratulated Palestinians for their victory against Israel. Ayatollah Khamenei noted that Palestinians' resistance left the Zionist regime with no choice but to request a ceasefire.
The regime's defeat was manifested both in its continued crimes and its request for a ceasefire. The Israeli regime was forced to concede defeat.
The Iranian leader noted that the Israeli regime will get weaker than what it is today, while the preparedness of resistance forces will make Palestine stronger day by day. He also called on the entire Muslim nations to feel responsible for the Palestinian cause.
Muslim governments should enter the scene with sincerity to support the Palestinian nation, whether by boosting their military might or lending financial support. This is required more than ever before for the reconstruction of the infrastructure and repairing the damage done to Gaza.
Ayatollah Khamenei emphasized that the crimes Israel committed during its latest onslaught should not be left unpunished. He said Israeli authorities, particularly Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, must be brought to justice in independent international tribunals.
The defeat will indirectly do that, because Israel has seen, the Israeli government has seen, that it no longer has the level of support around the world that it once believed it had. People spoke up in the streets. There were mass demonstrations in support of Palestine around the world. Many governments, although they were critical of Hamas, unjustly critical, they were also critical of Israel. This is new. Israel no longer can do whatever it wants with complete impunity.
Israel launched an offensive on the Gaza Strip and approved a ceasefire without any preconditions or strategic breakthrough. This means the Palestinian resistance has taught Israelis an important lesson, and that is the Israeli enemy is incapable of facing Palestine's united uprising.
Moving on, tens of thousands of Pakistani protesters have taken to the streets to vent their anger at the war crimes committed by the Israeli regime against unarmed Palestinians. Our correspondent Javed Rana has a report from Islamabad.
A massive public outpouring against Israel in Pakistan. The streets of the mega city of Karachi flooded with protesters in solidarity with Palestinians. There is no letup to anti-Israel protest in this 220 million populated Muslim country after Israel attacked and desecrated Islam's third holiest site in the eastern Jerusalem Al-Quds and imposed a unilateral war on Gaza. The huge collateral and human losses in the latest round of one-sided war imposed on unarmed Palestinians has once again become a rallying point to unify people from all segments of the society in Pakistan to join hands to protest against Israel.
We thank to Allah. Today people in every Muslim country stand by Palestinians. And by God willing, we would continue our war against Israel until we liberate Al-Quds Mosque.
The anti-Israel protests have been swelling in Pakistan despite a fragile ceasefire between Israel and Hamas administration in Gaza. Pakistan's government is feeling the heat of public pressure, which is reflected in country's foreign minister's rare and blunt remarks about Western media outlets on how they have been whitewashing war crimes of Israel against Palestinians.
Israel is losing out. They're losing the media war despite their connections. They are losing the media war. The tide is turning.
What are their connections?
Deep pockets.
What does that mean?
Well, they're very influential people. I mean, they control media.
I would call that an anti-Semitic remark.
Pakistan has rejected criticism of pro-Israeli lobbies and Western media, claiming that country's foreign minister's remarks were anti-Semitic. On the contrary, foreign minister's analogy about nexus between Israel and Western media has been welcomed across the Muslim world. Islamabad says the Western media has been covering up the massacre of Palestinians by propagating it as Israel's right of self-defense. On the other hand, whenever leaders of the Muslim countries speak truth about Israel's aggression and apartheid state's overgrown influence on Western media to whitewash its war crimes, they call it anti-Semitic. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif says removing the sanctions imposed by former U.S. President Trump against Iran is a legal and moral obligation. On his Twitter post, Zarif said that removal of the sanctions is not negotiating leverage. He said that the sanctions did not work for Trump. They won't work for the current U.S. administration either. On Sunday, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said it remains unclear whether Tehran is ready and willing to take what he called necessary steps to return to compliance with the nuclear deal. The agreement got into trouble after the U.S. pulled out of it in 2018. Iran and the remaining signatories are engaged in talks to revive the accord. Tehran has repeatedly emphasized that Washington has to take the first step by removing all the sanctions verifiably. Independent journalist and commentator Brian Berletic says that the stance of the current U.S. administration shows that there is no policy shift in Washington toward Tehran, no matter who controls the White House.
Iran, in the very first place, complied to the conditions of this deal that it made with the United States. It did so in good faith. The international community recognized that Iran was in compliance. It was the United States that left the deal. And even after the U.S. left the deal, even America's own Western allies in Western Europe acknowledged that this was uncalled for, unnecessary, unjustified. They tried to salvage the deal. And now we have U.S. President Joe Biden, who was vice president when this deal was first pushed forward. The first thing he should have done was unconditionally return to the deal. It wasn't Iran that was the problem in the first place. The U.S. poses as the self-appointed leader of this so-called rules-based international order, and a good leader needs to take responsibility for their mistakes. For President Joe Biden, it's an easy sell because all he has to say was his political opponent, Donald Trump, did this. And now he's undoing it. But the fact that he isn't suggests that there's more to this than meets the eye, that U.S. foreign policy towards Iran is continuous, no matter who is in the White House.
Now, while the talks to salvage the Iran nuclear deal continue in Vienna, the country's president has pledged to press on with diplomatic efforts until an agreement is finalized. Hassan Rouhani said that the U.S. has expressly stated readiness to remove the anti-Iran sanctions in accordance with the nuclear deal. We're going to Vienna. IAEA General Director is speaking there.
Qualitatively and quantitatively. So what we saw as a possibility that should be avoided back then was even war. So, right now. In terms of what we are doing, as you know, this is apart from the general parameters which are given in the joint statement that I subscribed back in February. We have a number of technical documents that detail the places where we are basically having cameras, flow meters, and electronic online systems to check on the enrichment that is taking place in the different locations. So there's not much mystery. I mean, what we cannot get into is exactly what place, what kind of equipment, because this is, of course, safeguards confidential information. But basically, we are looking at what's going on there in terms of enrichment, in terms of the basic activities that are taking place. And this, let me add, is, of course, and I should repeat this again, this is not equivalent to the levels that you may have with the additional transparency measures that were provided for by the JCPOA and the additional protocol. I think we should all be reminded of the fact that this temporary technical understanding is a sort of a stopgap measure. It's something that we came up with as a way to avoid, as I was saying before, flying completely blind, losing essential information to allow us, hopefully, if those levels of access are restored for us, so that we can reconstruct what may have been happening.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of a speech delivered on May 7th, 2021 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution on the occasion of the International Al-Quds Day. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, in his speech on the occasion of International Quds Day, referring to the change in the balance of power in favor of Islamic world and Palestine, emphasized, I tell you with confidence the downward movement of the Zionist regime has started and will not stop.
Will the normalization of relations with a few weak and small countries be able to help that regime? Of course, those countries will not benefit from the relations either, as the Zionist regime will transgress against their properties and their land, and it will promote corruption and insecurity in their countries. Of course, these truths should not make others forget about their heavy duty. Muslim and Christian scholars should announce the act of normalization as haram from a religious perspective, and intellectuals and liberated individuals should explain to everyone the results of this treachery, which is a stab in the back of Palestine. Contrary to the downward movement of the regime, an increase in the capabilities of the camp of resistance is a sign of a bright future, an increase in defensive and military power, self-sufficiency in building effective weapons, the self-confidence of mujahids, the increasing awareness of youth, the extension of the resistance circle to the entire country of Palestine and beyond, the recent uprising of youth in defending Masjid al-Aqsa, and the simultaneous promotion of the Palestinian nation's spirit of jihad, and innocence among public opinion in many parts of the world.
Every day we tell each other that this day will be the last, and tomorrow we all can go home free, and all this will finally end. Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow will be free.
The logic behind the Palestinian cause, which has been proposed by the Islamic Republic of Iran and has been registered in the United Nations documents, is a progressive and attractive logic. Palestinian warriors can bring up the idea of holding a referendum with the participation of the main inhabitants of Palestine. The referendum will determine the political system of the country, and the main inhabitants, including the displaced Palestinians, no matter what their ethnicity and religion are, will participate in it. That political system will bring back the displaced Palestinians and will determine the fate of the foreigners inhabiting there. This demand is based on the common democracy accepted in the whole world, and no one can question its progressiveness. The Palestinian fighters should continue their legitimate and moral fight against the usurping regime until it is forced to give in to this demand. Move forward in the name of God and know that Allah will certainly aid those who aid His cause. The Holy Quran, chapter 22, verse 40. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah. All praises to Allah, all praises to Allah. Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah. All praises to Allah, all praises to Allah.
Palestinians have poured to the streets to celebrate their victory over Israel in the 11-day fighting between the two sides. Rallies were held across the besieged Gaza Strip in condemnation of the Israeli regime and celebration of its defeat. Gatherings were also held in the occupied West Bank, where joyful participants cheered for the victory for the resistance. The celebrations came after an Egypt-brokered ceasefire went into effect on Friday morning, ending the fiercest battle there in years. This wasn't the first time the besieged territory came under Israeli fire, but this time, Palestinians turned the tables against the regime and launched unprecedented rocket and drone attacks on Israeli cities, inflicting damage and casualties on the enemy. Experts believe that Israel has succumbed to the unprecedented response by the Palestinian resistance and agreed to the ceasefire without any preconditions.
I think it's a huge win. The fact is that never before have we seen Israel penetrated militarily, psychologically, and morally in this way before. The sheer numbers of Palestinian resistance missiles that actually penetrated the Iron Dome is absolutely incredible. This much-vaunted dome, which was meant to protect the Israeli civilians, essentially collapsed, because my estimation is around 30% of the missiles got through. And what were these missiles? Essentially, they were just homemade rockets. Not only that, what we've seen is that this, for the first time, turned into an insurrection within occupied Palestinian territory, within the colony itself they call Israel. You saw huge numbers of Palestinians demonstrating and rising up, and actually huge clashes took place. A lot of that would have been suppressed.
People across the world have shown their solidarity with Palestinians in the past few days. In the United States, protesters called for the cessation of all funding to Israel. As the Israeli regime was targeting the people of Palestine, the U.S. administration approved the sale of $735 million in precision-guided weapons to the Israeli regime. The arms deal is now pending the approval of Congress. Several American congresspeople, including Senator Bernie Sanders and House Representatives Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Mark Pocan, and Rashida Tlaib, objected to the plan and introduced motions to block the sales. But given the traditionally strong support for Israel in the Congress, the motions will almost certainly fail.
The U.S. is totally $3.5 billion per annum is donated by Israel to by America to Israel in order to sustain its arms industry. As the bombs were falling on Palestinian children, you found that Joe Biden cleared $750 million of aid for arms and missiles to Israel. So that was the initial response of America.
In the meantime, U.S. President Joe Biden has welcomed the ceasefire, expressing hope that it would hold. He, however, reaffirmed the U.S. support for the Israeli regime. Several Israeli political and military figures have questioned Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's motives for launching the offensive on the Gaza Strip and approving a ceasefire without any strategic breakthrough for the regime. Netanyahu's political opponents speculate that the premier ordered the strikes after he failed to establish a coalition cabinet to put an end to Israel's political stalemate. But the developments over the past 2 weeks have shown that the next time the regime ventures an offensive against Gaza, it could face consequences more serious than a political vacuum in Tel Aviv.
The United States and its arch-rival China may have toned down their rhetoric against each other compared to the chaotic era of former U.S. President Donald Trump. But tensions between the two superpowers are simmering as they remain deeply engaged in an intense global rivalry. There are many flashpoints in their testy relationship, one being the resource-rich South China Sea. Chinese and American military vessels have had numerous encounters there. This week, China said an American warship illegally entered its territorial waters in the sea, but was expelled by Chinese ships and planes. Beijing was quick to slam the U.S. action, branding it as a violation of China's sovereignty. Beijing warned that such moves undermine regional peace and stability. However, the U.S. Navy said its vessel asserted navigational rights and freedoms near a number of islands claimed by China, Taiwan, and Vietnam. China believes that America has fully abandoned its supposed neutrality in the region and is clearly siding with nations which have rival territorial claims in the South China Sea.
The United States is trying to transform these maritime disputes in the South China Sea. These are typical maritime disputes that you'll find all over the world, including in places like Europe, between European nations. The U.S. is trying to transform this from mere disputes into a regional, even global conflict, because they need to have a pretext to justify their military remaining in the region.
Naval tensions between the U.S. and China are not limited to the South China Sea. Earlier this week, an American destroyer sailed through the Taiwan Strait, angering Beijing, which considers self-ruled Taiwan a breakaway region that must one day be reunited with the mainland. China wants the U.S. to respect its territorial integrity and has repeatedly warned that this red line must never be crossed. Technological rivalry between the United States and China is expanding fast, especially in highly advanced sectors like 5G, artificial intelligence, and the semiconductor industry. The U.S. Senate voted this week to advance a bill authorizing well over $100 billion for technology research in the face of Chinese rivalry. The Endless Frontier Act is a huge investment in emerging sciences and manufacturing on a scale not seen in decades. The legislation has bipartisan support. Politicians from both major camps in the United States have a rising sense of urgency to bolster America's ability to compete with China. The urgency was also highlighted in U.S. President Joe Biden's first speech to Congress last month. During his address, the U.S. president left no doubt that America will do its utmost to outpace the Asian superpower in terms of trade and technology. Biden identifies China as the toughest foreign policy challenge. His administration is trying hard to reduce American reliance on Chinese technology in areas that Washington believes raise national security risks and protect critical technologies from being transferred to China. The U.S. president has also said the American military will maintain a strong presence in the Indo-Pacific, where the U.S. has been trying to contain the growing influence of its arch rival. The Biden administration has toned down anti-Beijing rhetoric, but what's certain is that America is determined to follow policies aimed at containing the Chinese influence worldwide.
The United States has been the sole superpower for decades, and then with the resurgence of Russia and now China's rise, they're watching their global primacy slip away. So even though there's many excuses for why they have this conflict with China, the main reason is they cannot accept that China, even though it has a larger population and plenty of resources, they cannot accept the fact that China is going to surpass them.
As the U.S. intensifies efforts against its main global rival, China is expected to pursue its own ways to catch up with and even overtake America in different fields.
The boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement has urged people around the world to boycott Israeli and multinational firms complicit in Tel Aviv's regime's abuse of Palestinian human rights. Fresh call comes amid Israel's relentless bombardment of the Gaza Strip. There's a growing consensus that Israel now, like South Africa in the past, is an apartheid state that must be met with targeted sanctions, boycotts, and divestments.
Well, I would not say that the governments of any countries have the will to try and boycott Israel or take any really clear measures against Israel. But I would say that among students and among, for example, the Arab American movement in the U.S., I think there is more of a will to say, no, we have to cut off the arms to Israel. We have to cut off the aid and the trade to Israel, exactly as we did with apartheid South Africa. There's more of a will to say that.
The movement says the measures can help challenge the complicity of international firms in Israeli crimes against Palestinians and help the struggle of Palestinians for freedom, justice, and equality. BDS activists are now trying to translate the activism that has been generated among celebrities and cultural icons into meaningful change. Football figures in the UK and the Arab world, Black Lives Matter activists in the UK, as well as several progressive U.S. lawmakers, have voiced their opposition to Israeli crimes against Palestinians in the occupied territories. The movement says there is growing consensus that, like South Africa in the past, Israel is an apartheid regime that must be met with action.
These students have built up a level of confidence now that makes them react more loudly when Israel starts mass bombardments of the Palestinian people. So you have more confident crowds of protesters, and that is driving these few liberal politicians to push President Biden in the direction of cutting off the military aid to Israel. And Biden is an old Zionist who doesn't want to do that ever, but they are pushing him more in that direction.
The fresh round of violence started after Israeli troops and settlers announced plans to expel dozens of Palestinians from the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood in occupied East Jerusalem Al-Quds. Illegal Israeli settlers are looking to take over the properties of Palestinian families. This is not an isolated incident. Since its creation in 1948, Israel has used discriminatory and racist policies against Palestinians in various forms. There is now a general consensus that the racist policies of the Israeli regime are similar to the ones implemented by the apartheid regime in South Africa.
Black Lives Matter is more loud and clear and confident about opposing Israel because Israel so much resembles apartheid South Africa. And the willingness of some politicians, as you mentioned, AOC, Rashida Tlaib, and Ilhan Omar, the willingness of some politicians to oppose Israel, to oppose aid to Israel, is something new. They are gradually inching their way towards saying cut off the military aid to Israel. They're not there.
The BDS movement seeks to raise global awareness about these policies and discourage companies from doing business with the occupiers of Palestinian lands. The BDS movement, which is modeled after the anti-apartheid movement in South Africa, was initiated in 2005 by over 170 Palestinian organizations that were pushing for various forms of boycott against Israel until it met its obligations under international law. Thousands of volunteers worldwide have since then joined the BDS movement. Israel has spared no effort to undermine the movement. Back in 2011, Knesset passed a measure to curb its activities.
I cannot think of anything more foolish than to say that you want to have any kind of divestment or sanctions or whatever, or boycott against a country that, when all is said and done, is the only democracy in the region.
We must continue to stand firm against the profoundly biased campaign to delegitimize the state of Israel through boycotts, divestment, and sanctions.
The BDS movement is often linked to those kinds of frames. So I will continue to condemn the BDS movement.
The Tel Aviv regime has started a huge lobby campaign with pro-Israeli groups around the world to undermine the BDS. Back in 2019, U.S. House lawmakers passed a bipartisan resolution condemning the movement.
On May 15, 1948, the regime forced some 750,000 Palestinians to leave their homes and villages and expelled them into refugee camps that still exist in the occupied West Bank, Gaza, Jordan, Syria, and Lebanon. Armed forces massacred entire villages of men, women, and even children. That pushed rightful owners of Palestine to leave their homes and lands as they feared losing their lives. Consequently, that provided the ground for Zionists to establish the Israeli regime. The Palestinians were to suffer further when the West Bank and Gaza fell to the Israelis during the Six-Day War in 1967. Millions of Palestinians, including those displaced since 1948, found themselves under military occupation as well as further Israeli expansionism in their lands. In 2020, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu unveiled his intention to annex the occupied West Bank with the support of the United States. The move is widely condemned as it is considered illegal and in defiance of international law. For many Palestinians, that is just the last chapter in a process that started with the initial loss of their lands in 1948. More than 600,000 Israelis currently live in over 230 settlements built since the 1967 Israeli occupation of the West Bank and East Jerusalem Al-Quds. That's while all Israeli settlement activities are illegal under international law. Every year, Palestinians reaffirm their right to return to their homes and villages in historic Palestine on Nakba Day. They hold annual rallies to commemorate decades of ethnic cleansing of their homeland by the regime to establish what's known today as Israel. This year, Palestinians and their supporters across the globe mark the day amid Israel's deadly aggression against Palestinians in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip.
The Israeli government is taking more lands in the West Bank. More than two-thirds of the West Bank has been swallowed by the Israeli settlements. And every day they are also taking more lands in Jerusalem. As we have seen in Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood, they are kicking Palestinians out of their hands, of their homes and lands in order to replace them with Israeli, with Jewish settlers. It will continue because the Palestinians are not willing to surrender to the Israeli to the Israeli policies of ethnic cleansing.
In a pre-dawn airstrike, Israeli warplanes attacked Al-Shati refugee camp in western Gaza on Saturday. 8 children and 2 women were killed while 15 others were injured. Following that, Hamas's military wing, the Izzeddin al-Qassam Brigades, said it has fired tens of rockets at Tel Aviv and Ashdod in retaliation for Israel's attacks on the Gaza Strip. The Izzeddin al-Qassam Brigades also said they launched drone and mortar attacks on Israel's Kisafim military base. The group has announced it is prepared to bomb Tel Aviv for 6 months in a row. Hamas has recently stepped up attacks on Israel in response to the regime's aggression on the besieged territory. Israel's Ramon Airport, as well as cities of Ashkelon and Ashdod, have also come under missile attacks in the past few days. On Saturday afternoon, the Israeli regime also flattened the 11-story Al Jalla building that housed the offices of Al Jazeera and the Associated Press News Agency. Press freedom advocates sharply condemned the move, calling it a brazen attempt to silence journalists covering the Israeli military's ongoing offensive that has killed scores of people.
They will continue to do so because they are launching a war against not only the Palestinian people but also against the media that is showing the real Israeli face and real Israeli violations of human rights.
Targeting the media organizations and journalists in Israeli military offensives in the Gaza Strip isn't an accident. This is systematic targeting of media in Gaza in order to prevent reporting from there and to create a cloak of secrecy around Israeli crimes.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Thank you. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio, and I'm your host, Ali. This radio show is about Islamic lifestyle, and in each episode, we will be talking about a different lesson. Please stay with us till the end of today's program. Today's lesson, the pillars of character. Well, for a monotheist, it is essential to possess a solid character, someone who believes in Allah, His Prophet, and Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam must possess a firm and positive character. Here are a few pillars of good character. Number one, trustworthiness. Number two, respect. Number three, responsibility. Number four, fairness. Number five, caring. Last but not the least, number six, civic sense. Now, one can argue that there could be many more pillars of character, and we are open to that, and that's fine. But according to one classification, some of our scholars have divided a good character to be dependent on these pillars. So let's talk a little bit about the first one, which is trustworthiness. How can I be trustworthy in my life? Well, one of the things you need to do is to be honest in communications and actions, right? Then don't deceive, cheat, or steal. Be reliable. Do what you say you will do. Having the courage to do the right thing. You know, sometimes we know what the right thing is, but we don't step forward to perform it. Build a good reputation. You know, this is by being in that constant state of goodness, you build a good reputation. Be loyal. Stand by your family, friends, and relatives. Keep your promises. Right? We know that prophets and imams, they were very strict when it comes to the promises they make. Every time they would make a promise to anyone, to a Muslim, to a non-Muslim, they would try their best to keep it. Welcome back to your listeners. Today we are discussing the pillars of character. And we said that, you know, we have listed just six of them, and there could be many pillars, but these six seem to be the most important: trustworthiness, respect, responsibility, fairness, caring, and civic sense. Now, let's talk about, after trustworthiness, let's talk about this respect. Well, in human society, we all are thirsty for respect, right? It's a need of a human society, and it's a mutual thing. There's no one party in the world who would not want to be respected. No individual, no group, no political organization, no, you know, government, no. Nobody likes to be humiliated. They all like to be respected. Now, how do we take this notion of respect at an individual and personal level? Well, treat others with respect and follow the golden rule. You respect them, they respect you back. Be tolerant and accepting of differences. Unfortunately, this is something which is missing in many circles today. If you look at people, the intolerance has gotten to an unprecedented level, unfortunately. Then using good manners, not using bad language. You know, sometimes we're just too casual and we start using foul language, bad language. Remember that anybody who's listening to you using curse words and, God forbid, you know, and foul language, know that they don't respect you. Even if they laugh when you do that, in their heart, they don't respect you. Then be considerate of the feelings of others, because everybody has feelings here. Don't threaten, hit, or hurt anyone. Deal peacefully with anger, insults, and disagreements. These are a few of the tips that we wanted to convey to you in today's episode. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Economic divide.
Hello, welcome to Economic Divide with me, Kavit Taqvai. It has been weeks since the Iran nuclear talks began in Vienna, and we have heard nothing but Iran wanting the sanctions to be removed by the U.S. Yet, that has not happened. What has happened? Well, the talks have continued. Is that a sign of progress? That's what we're going to try to find out in today's program. Coming up, the latest on the Vienna talks. Where do things stand? Have the talks hit an impasse? What are the new U.S. excessive demands all about, like the destruction of centrifuges? Also, a review of terminologies that we are now all too familiar with: imposed, reimposed, and relabeled. These are what Iran's lead negotiator has requested to be removed time and again. But the European side and the U.S. are not listening. And finally, even if there is a deal, will it work? Will Iran gain the economic benefits that it should enjoy? Plus, U.S. governors and state legislators able to go around the State Department That's an exclusive economic divide that's going to be coming up later.
It's been weeks since the Iran nuclear talks began in Vienna. One would think that there should be something that should have come out of the talks. Yet the only sign of any kind of success is that the talks are continuing. At the same time, there are signs that the talks have hit an impasse. Here are some key issues pointing to that direction. The U.S. wants the destruction of Iran's new generation centrifuges, return for a temporary suspension of some of the sanctions related to the nuclear deal. This is while under the JCPOA, Iran's advanced centrifuges, including the IR-4, IR-6, and IR-9, must be stored away under the supervision of the International Atomic Energy Agency and not destroyed. The new demands have been put forward while the U.S. has not even agreed to remove all the JCPOA-related sanctions.
We are, though, nonetheless, pleased that Iran has continued to agree to engage in discussions. In direct discussions with us and with our partners on how we move forward and what is needed to allow us to move back into the JOPCA so that we're part of it again, that we should have never gotten out of it, in my view, without us making concessions that we're just not willing to make.
Washington is also complicating the talks by insisting on keeping in place 500 anti-Iran sanctions. This would prevent Iran from benefiting from the economic privileges offered under the JCPOA. This will also get in the way of Iran normalizing its trade relations with the rest of the world in contravention of Article 29 of the deal. In this Q&A segment, we have with us Koichiro Tanaka. He's a professor at the Graduate School for Media and Governance at Keio University. He's also a joint board member and president, and he's a senior analyst and head of the Iran program. Mr. Tanaka, welcome. First, was the idea of classifying the Iran sanctions into removable, negotiable, and non-removable. Then came the reimposed, imposed, and relabeled idea. Which basically was a hurdle regarding the sanctions. This came before the centrifuge destruction demand. Is the U.S. trying to buy time, or is it trying to get as much sanctions to remain in place, which Iran has rejected all of them outright?
Well, regarding the sanctions, I think that there are plenty of sanctions in place as of today that keep Iran out from the or away from the international trade normalization process. So the Americans don't actually need all those, but still they are looking for the things back at home, meaning that they are trying to say, satisfy their own people, including the members of the Congress, that this is not the simple return to the old JCPOA that existed between 2015 to early 2017. For that sake, I believe the United States, the current administration in Washington, would continue to deal with the matters as they wish.
Okay, we appreciate that, Mr. Tanaka. All right, the U.S. has exerted the most severe sanctions, as the U.S. Secretary of Treasury, Steven Mnuchin, stated, like in this instance.
As previously announced by the President, we are announcing additional sanctions against the Iranian regime as a result of the attack on U.S. and allied troops. First, the President is issuing an executive order authorizing the imposition of additional sanctions against any individual owning, operating, trading with, or assisting sectors of the Iranian economy, including construction, manufacturing, textiles, and mining.
Well, here, the Iranian Foreign Minister, Mohammad Javad Zarif, explains the U.S. state of mind on Iran as seen through the lens of the former President, Donald Trump.
I believe President Trump, unfortunately, does not have good advisors. He's been waiting for Iranian government's collapse since he withdrew from the nuclear deal. At that time, John Bolton promised him that maximum pressure will bring us to our knees within a few months. Now the United States can come back to the negotiating table, but unfortunately, the suggestions by